This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
And you are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Our next guest is Wayne Gatt. Wayne is the Secretary of the Police Association of Victoria. I want to speak to Wayne, and Tess and I want to speak to Wayne. There's a couple of issues, but a report has been made by Charles Sturt University. It's called The Impact of COVID-19 on Frontline Workers, Stress and Anxiety. And my understanding is it was about 1,500 police officers who took part in this survey. Good morning, Wayne. How are you?
Good morning. How are you going?
Pretty good. Look, I wanted to get, if we can, get out of the way first. There's been a lot of discussion before we get to this report around playgrounds. We've had a lot of messages from listeners. What is the situation? We know what the rules are, or the health order. In terms of your police officers on the ground, tell us what the situation is, Wayne, with regard to playgrounds.
Well, I think everyone, as you know the rules, and they probably know the rules better today than they did when this was announced on Monday. Yep. And I think government has gotten better, to be honest, if I could say that, at communicating with the community around the health reasons for some of these decisions. But the situation for police is the same as it is for all of the other restrictions, and that is that our members have a role to play, that they'll be out there, they will be actively helping the community and enforcing these restrictions. But as we said to the community last week and we reinforced today, our members do that with a degree of empathy and compassion. They do it, you know, they're not robotic in their interactions with people. They understand where the community is at the moment. They understand the pressure that even today's announcements that are probably happening even as we speak from the Premier in regional Victoria will have and will continue to have on the community. It's difficult for them. And so I think when we see our police in the community, when they're out there doing COVID enforcement, I suppose recognise the person behind the uniform. There is somebody there that is struggling with COVID-19 too, and for all of the same reasons that other individuals have in the community, they're afflicted by the same challenges, but also some of the additional challenges that come from doing a very, very unpopular job at this difficult time. Mm.
So it's Tess.
Wayne, it's Tess here. I was going to say, often when I'm out in the community doing my daily exercise routine and I come across somebody who's not wearing a mask, I do have an emotional reaction and want to do something about it, but of course I don't. It's not my place to do that or to say something about it. But police must actually have to confront this all the time. And I can't imagine what sort of experiences they would have when they actually approach people, and simple things like mask wearing or hanging around in groups. Do you have any insight into what the experience of the police is?
Oh, look, we've got plenty of insight into that, and it's a really good example that you give. I mean, I think we've all probably been confronted with that situation, if you think about it. We've probably all been in a shopping centre, or we've all been outside walking down the path, doing the right thing, and coming down the other in the other direction or somewhere around us where we see somebody or people that perhaps aren't doing. Now, police have a difficult position in that, you know, their job means that they actually have to go and confront those issues, and they are sometimes met with aggression and hostility. And you know, really, at the end of the day, our members also know that they're enforcing something that's, you know, wildly unpopular, and, you know, particularly for those that aren't complying, they know they're going to be confronted with somebody who's going to have a fair bit to say to them. that has taken a toll on police officers, not only in Victoria, but all across Australia. And this research that we're about to talk to really did define that, and talked about things like depression and anxiety being almost five times the incident rate of the general population. And it cited situations just like that as some of the major drivers for some of what is making, I suppose, an already difficult job very, very much more difficult for our police and PSOs in Victoria and across the country.
It has a number of findings, Wayne, and let's speak about those first. That it does say that depression, anxiety and burnout are between 3 and 9 times higher than the general population. And the figure that absolutely slapped my face was that depression was 9 times more and anxiety was 5 times more higher than the general population. Now, they're frightening numbers because already it is, you know, and this isn't just referring to police officers. This is other frontline emergency services staff that would be experiencing the same things for different reasons. Were you surprised by those figures, Wayne?
Look, yes and no. I mean, I suppose what we always know is that police emergency service workers have elevated levels of psychological injury, particularly police officers. And we know that because this is an area of focus that we've been looking at for the best part of 5 to 8 years now. So I suppose when you combine what are natural features of a COVID response to an industry like policing or other emergency service workers that tends to isolate, tends to reduce human contact and the ability for people to seek care and support, just like it does in the rest of the community. But in particularly when you do that to a community group or an industry group that is, you know, generally afflicted at a higher rate in terms of depression, anxiety, for example, or post-traumatic stress disorder, then you would expect an elevation at those times or at times like we've seen. And, you know, I know speaking to our members in the role that we have in supporting their health and well-being, that many of them have experienced difficulty at this time getting support because, you know, like everyone in the community, there have been pressures on our health system, and that health system includes the mental health system as well.
Wayne, it's Tass here again. Look, you know, I think what you've described is something that's very real and most of us do see. I recall once speaking with a police officer who said, what do you expect? You know, we don't deal with nice situations. We don't deal with nice people. So, you know, that to some degree actually helps to understand why these sorts of experiences do exist. But can we move on to what can we do about it and what are the expectations of frontline officers in trying to actually deal with this situation? What are top two or three things that could be done?
Well, the research was pretty good in providing, I suppose, police leadership with some good ideas in terms of what it needs to do, particularly during a pandemic. And really, this is one of the first pieces of research that it has to draw on since the pandemic began. And, you know, it's set in an Australian context. But clear leadership and clear messaging is really, really important for police. And look, that's something we've, you know, been challenged by. The goalposts have naturally kept on moving, and we don't blame anybody for that. It's just a feature of the pandemic, you know.
What do you mean by that? Are you saying that the current communication channels between management and people on the front line are not adequate?
No, it's not that they're not adequate. I suppose we're dealing with a very dynamic situation. So if you think about the pandemic and the responses that the entire community has had to deal with, we've gone from situations where restrictions have sometimes changed on a weekly,
daily basis even.
Daily sometimes, up and down. Now, every time there's an announcement in terms of that for the community, there's also a direct implication for police and other emergency service workers in the way that they then have to respond. And I said this last week in a piece that we wrote for the Herald Sun, every time there's an announcement made for the community, police are particularly sitting there going, and what does that mean for the way that we will have to enforce those new restrictions?
And any other tips? Are there any other tips?
Yeah, certainly. And I suppose managing the workloads are another issue. So recognising that the extra demands on an already stretched workforce, you know, and particularly the need to rapidly redeploy resources, and we see that, for example, with hundreds of members as we speak today deployed to the border in Operation Tidewatch in our hotel quarantine program, in Sentinel patrols in regional and metropolitan Melbourne. Recognising that that's additional work that is over and above the work that they have to continue to do every day. Now, in a time of great pressure and great crisis, of course, and given that the elongated period of time this pandemic is now taking, we have to recognise the cumulative impact that will have on workers in industries like the emergency services. So we need to manage that better.
One of the key points I see in the report, Wayne, is that the staff, the frontline emergency service staff, which is, you know, this report is predominantly police officers, but other, and we've had a number of messages from frontline staff saying, yes, so glad you're talking about this, this experience is familiar to us, that the leadership of the organisations need to listen and appreciate the on-the-ground reality from the workers. You know, so the feedback mechanism and you know, saying this is what we're experiencing now, whether it's in the playground, whether it's in Bourke Street, whether it's in, you know, Omeo, Ferntree Gully, it doesn't matter. When that, is it saying to me that perhaps that feedback mechanism, the leadership of the organisation isn't doing enough to understand that on-the-ground reality? Because that seems to be a pretty strong point in this.
In the research, it does make clear that there are gaps there, and I think I think that's a natural consequence of organisations, all organisations, but, you know, emergency services in particular, having to really scramble constantly to meet, you know, today's crisis or today's new or emerging needs. And, like, you know, as I say, yeah, as we have this conversation, there'll be police officers scrambling to work out what do the increased restrictions starting at 1 p.m. today mean for the way that they have to police. And so it does mean that sometimes that can really challenge police leadership in the context that gives them a lot of work to do. And this is really where police associations, other health unions and emergency service unions like the Ambulance Union and United Firefighters Union have a really important role to play and have been instrumental, I believe, in communicating the frontline feelings and responses to police management and leadership so that they can be addressed as quickly as they possibly can. It's a challenge. And look, we're not in any way critical of our members, and they are our members who are in senior leadership positions too. They have had weighted on their shoulders enormous challenges, and I would go so far as saying some of the biggest policing challenges that have confronted policing in its history.
Wayne, thank you very much for your time this morning. It's been a really, really interesting conversation, thank you for highlighting these incredibly important issues.
Because we've actually run out of time, sorry, yeah. Wayne.
No worries. Thank you, guys.
Look, thanks again for the opportunity and for sharing the report. I know Tass and I are going to spend a lot more time reading it because I think there's some more information in there that we might want to revisit in other areas.
Of course, of course.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.